Welcome to day two of Ignite on the Gold Coast. Hope you've been enjoying the weather. And everyone can hear me. Great. Welcome aboard. I know it's after lunch. And it's going to be interesting. So I'll keep it zippy, snappy. And hopefully we're all going to walk out of here learning something. So this is a really interesting slide. When I got the slide deck and they said, Mick, you know, make your presentation on this slide deck. I've got prizes for the best thought captions that these three people are thinking. So I'll ask you at the end of the session. I've got my ideas, so we'll see how we compare. It's being recorded, so I should be mindful of that. Okay, great. So let's move on with the clicker. Beautiful. All right. So what we're going to cover this afternoon together is using Service Fabric to build your next solution with zero downtime. Okay. So who's heard of Service Fabric? Who's used it? Beautiful. Have we used it? Are we on the private preview and things like that? Okay. Couple of us. So it's really quite interesting from a perspective of, I think in the last 5 years, this is probably one of the pieces of technology that have excited me a lot. And just in terms of what we're given as developers, either where, you know, you've heard DevOps and everything else, so as the whole paradigm shifting, you know, what can we get out of our environments as developers and as, you know, IT pros or deployment or whatever that looks like. So how can we build better robust systems? Service Fabric, really, really interesting piece of technology. And so it's a private preview / public preview coming up very soon. So keep an eye out for that, and I'll give you some details coming up in the presentation. So just give you a quick sort of run through on who I am. There we go. So I'm Mick Badron, and I've been an MVP for over 11 years in various technologies, mainly around the integration space, application integration and things, and been an Azure MVP for the last 3 years. And what a ride it has been, let me tell you. So as we all appreciate that, you know, the cloud moves at such a rate, and it's really, you know, a challenge, and that's what makes it exciting for us all. So that, you know, almost every 2 days, a major new service, a major new feature is released in the cloud. So pretty phenomenal cadence. So, you know, from a builder perspective, you know, developer, builder type scenario, it's too compelling to ignore. So, and I'm also doing Movember as well. So that's been an exciting one in the company. So, you know, with the guys and everything else. So, in terms of just a quick one on my life, I'll just run through. This is my wife who keeps me honest, and she chases me around the house at the moment with the clippers to get rid of my Movember creation. And I've got my technology advocates at home, my son, my daughter, and that's Omar there, their grandma. I've got Dutch heritage, and what comes out of her mouth in 2 minutes takes me 2 weeks to tell my older, you know, my sort of just teenage son. So the only person that really listens to me is my dog, Honey, and she loves swimming and the relaxing side of things. All right, so I think my technology challenges are harder at home than at work. So I'm sure a lot of you can relate. So let's have a look and see what we've got coming up. So in terms of what is Service Fabric, okay, I just want to run through that pretty quickly to see who's there. This is a level 300 session, so I will go into a fair bit of detail around some areas. And I then wanted to give you some samples around some of the different types of applications that we're building. How do we create, how do we build this, how do we use it, and what's it for? And really, the end part there is, The last point where we've got, or sorry, the last few points, upgrading your apps with zero downtime. All right, so as part of my role of CTO and things, I go and architect, go and work on proof of concepts and talk to a lot of customers. And one of the things that I'm hearing, you know, over and over and over again in probably the last 9 months is, Mick, we can't afford any downtime. We used to be able to ask for a window, but now it's getting so important that we can't actually get that window, or it's getting, you know, a lot more difficult to be able to secure that. So how can we build better software? How can we build better things that we're not typically caught by the traps of, you know, that we used to yesterday? And we've all been there, right? Hindsight is a wonderful thing that we can all say, hey, you built that wrong, or you did this, I'd do it differently. Absolutely. And, you know, even with the cloud as you see it today, what's it going to be in 3 months' time? What's it going to be in 6 months' time? Are we prepared? Are we agile enough? Are we capable? So these are all questions rather than, you know, this is the way I've always written an application, and this is the way I'm always going to write an application. So in terms of what is Service Fabric? So when we say I'd like to go and build an application and I'd like it to be, you know, potentially cloud aware, okay, I won't sort of say we're always building cloud aware apps, but if you're building mobile applications, reaching out to, you know, consumers on tablets, devices, and so on, you've got a whole idea of features, right? You've got this, wouldn't it be great if the app did this? Wouldn't it be great if we were able to do that? And just a quick story, I was working with a customer where they wanted to basically upgrade and enhance their core systems before they then went and extended out the edges so that they could have mobile B2B and B2C and so on. And in the end, we decided that far too much cost, but all they wanted to do was really enhance their mobile platform, and for a fraction of the cost that it was going to be to upgrade their core systems. Enhance their mobile platform along the edge, cache it, you know, Redis caching, whatever we can get out of it so that we separate the systems from the core system itself, or have very infrequent calls, and then go and use it. So the part here is that we just think in our heads, you know, we've got a whole bunch of features and I want to go and implement it. And it's a bit like the train of thought where we build an application, but what does it mean to make it production ready, right? And there's a really big, sometimes a huge gap between the developer saying it's ready, you know, it works on my machine, right? We all do that. And then running it in production, and actually running it 3 months in production, because that's when we've all finished the project and we've gone off on a golfing holiday, and suddenly, you know, things aren't working quite right. So there's actually a whole raft of other aspects to the application that we may or may not have factored in. Scalability, availability. Is it always going to be there? We assume it is because it's running in the cloud. Maybe, maybe not. Okay? And things like low latency, how do we plan for that? In my sort of fields, there's a lot of, we build high volume, low latency, near real-time interfaces. And that's a lot of work. So given that, you know, this is something that is given to us for free through Service Fabric, it's really exciting. So we also have things like, you know, life cycle. How can we make sure that our application is running, upgraded? You know, what happens in case of failures and things like this? So there's a lot more to just building, you know, building an application, building, whether it's a, you know, mobile facing, whatever it might be, but just points to think about, folks, when we're building. So enter this particular world. Let me just jump over here for a tick, which is the Azure Fabric, the Service Fabric. So we've got this notion of microservices. So we're building our application, and rather than just having, you know, we've all used web apps in IIS and you know, deployed out our entire websites and things. So they tend to be quite large chunks of applications. And what we would like to do is there any benefit in splitting that up? Is there any benefit in building it out of smaller modular pieces? You know, so the question around this session is, why would we go to this technology if you haven't seen it before? Why would we use it? And, you know, so it's a bit like when we write our applications and things, and when we develop, do you use classes or do you just use one big function that's got a start and an end down here? You know, and why do you break it up? Why do you break it into the classes that you do? So we know that there's benefit in that. So can we extend that benefit further? And we have this notion of microservices, and it's been thrown around a lot, but call them smaller modular classes, if you like, that are independent. And if any of you know, remember back to Com Plus, there was, we built our applications in a certain way, and then the environment of Com Plus was going to go and use it, so and execute it. And so this is exactly what Service Fabric is. So Service Fabric is that blue line, and don't worry too much about all the small text up the back there. You can get a copy of these slides. I put it in there because there is a huge amount of functionality in there. What Microsoft have done through Service Fabric, we're familiar with Azure and we're familiar with the way that Azure runs things. So how do we, you know, deploy to VMs? If I want to scale out to from one instance of my web app to 100 instances, it just happens. And then it scales back down again. So what we've been able to do through Service Fabric is get access to that kind of capability at the application level. So it's a bit like bringing Azure to our applications. And we can then start to build some very interesting things while having all of the HA, load balancing, fault tolerance, low latency, logging, diagnostics, and everything else on this. Sorry, there's just an auto timer on that, which is awesome. But the part that I get really excited about is the bottom of this. So if you start to see if you look at the new Microsoft, we're starting to get a lot of messaging around, hey, we support, you know, Mac OS, we support Linux, we're running, you know, Visual Studio Code version on as a version for Linux, as a version for Mac OS, and so on. So really cross-platform, really opened up. And if we start to see this Service Fabric here, the things that I build, I can run, and it's a little bit small up the back, I apologize. We've actually got Linux platforms here as well. So whatever we build in this technology, will run on Linux. Really interesting. And then we can use our Azure cloud, obviously. We can also use our on-premises platform, and we can also use another cloud provider as well. So Microsoft are basically saying, if you build in Service Fabric, we can provide the platform wherever you need to be. And that, as an application developer, that's really interesting because suddenly, you know, my on-premises solution can also run in the cloud, the same code base. So what does it mean? So it's not new, okay? So there's a lot of Microsoft services out there that use this. And this is exactly how they provide, you know, these set of services, Intune, DocDB, so on. So they've been using it internally for 5 years. And so what we have now is the ability from the primitives of the Service Fabric, they've now produced APIs that are a lot more easy to use and more consumable. So that's kind of where it sits at the moment. It's in a preview and shortly out to be public preview and shortly out to be released sometime after that. So all of these services, if we take Azure, SQL database, for example, you know that when you make a connection, you connect to some virtual object, some virtual instance somewhere, and then your call goes down to any number of thousand sort of processing type areas that can go, modules that can go off and process your request and come back again. Wouldn't it be good if we could build our applications this way so that we don't have to worry about, you know, high availability? What about if that thing fails? No problems. The fabric will look after it and spin it up. So that's the kind of thing that we want to be able to do as we start to build the next modern day architectures, APIs, applications, whatever they may be, right? Because as soon as you say, hey, I'm going to build this and I'm potentially going to land it in the cloud, deploy it to the cloud and start to, you know, get some heavy usage around it, The problem of just a simple Hello World app becomes quite larger. And it's for all the things that you're not building the application for. So what is a microservice? I just put up a definition up there around it's got logic and potentially a state. So this is this module, a smaller type. Think of it as a class. And so we also have, we can call other microservices, which makes sense. And we also have a logically consistency there in case it fails. So there's a notion that we can recover from a failure, and they call that self-healing. You may have heard that term around the place. So we have this thing around a container. So we'll see what these are in a tick. So what can we build? We can build our stateless applications. And for those of you today, think of a cloud service. Think of typically a web application, front end. It's all very stateless. And that's a similar analogy to our stateless services or applications that we can build. So we can also build stateful ones. So I need to, shopping cart, user profile type scenario. I need to be able to get back to that guy because that guy's got the info of this particular request or transaction that's been going through. So things like, what's the benefit? At the moment, this is great. And what we want to see is what are the benefits here? So how can we speed up what we're doing in terms of our development effort? And also, as I mentioned before, it's opened up to different platforms as well. So things like Node.js, Java, and so on. So they're in the wings to come. So in terms of how do I install this? How do I get a look in? And there's just a quick slide on how we install it. So I'm running a local service fabric cluster on my machine. Okay, we'll see what that is in a tick. And I can quite easily grab those install bits and go and install them in a VM somewhere. Okay, and we can also recently also provision this in the portal as well, in the Azure portal. So it's available in quite a few different places. So just a slightly different diagram now as we start to delve into it a bit further. So we've got the service fabric. The part above that are the APIs that are being exposed. So we have the notion of actors, and or the reliable actor API, as it's called, which very simply you can think of as classes. And we also have the reliable services API. The difference between the two is that the actor, if I use the actor API, the service fabric looks after a lot for me. If I use the service API, I want to have a deeper conversation with the service fabric. I want to be able to talk to the environment and then be able to nominate certain things that go on. So I want to be able to control that. And and there's reason for doing that, okay? And then basically, where are we going to run this? So it gets really exciting. So in terms of our actor API, right, simple class, very simple. I'll show it to you in code in a tick. And the key around this is that it's an easy thing to get up and running. So for example, Halo 5 on Xbox uses Service Fabric, and each actor is a user within Halo 5. Just to give you sort of some idea on where it's used. Now, the part that would, and the third point here that I put up is that it's single-threaded execution. So it's something to keep in mind, right? So the fabric looks after everything that it does, and it maintains consistency and so on. We get single-threaded across this. So it's a bit like having an STA thread marked at the top of your application or your program. What that means is that only one thread can execute one method at a time in that class. Whereas the reliable service API doesn't have this. We control it all. So very quick, very easy to get up and running. That's why we go there. All right. So let's jump over to my... Right. Come on, you good thing. Awesome. I'm in. Okay. You can see my screen. Great. Okay. All right. So basically, I'm in Visual Studio at the moment, and I've installed the bits on my machine. And so what I'd like to do is to come along and add a new project into this particular solution. So once I install all the new bits, I'll get my service fabric application project type that's in here. So I'm going to go and specify my application, and I'll just call it ActiveStateless app. So I'm then presented with several different service templates that I can use. So from a stateless service right through to, you know, I could even host my entire website as an actor or as one of these services if I wanted to through OWIN. So I will, for this particular one, I'll specify a stateless actor service, and I'll just call it actor stateless counter. This will all make sense in a tick. So Visual Studio is going off and creating my several projects there. So I've got some projects, and I get opened up to a particular page where next steps, sometimes there's clips and videos and so on that are there. So, all right, let me just explain this for a tick. So we've got four applications that you can see there. And the top application is my Service Fabric application. So that is the thing that has the necessary information in it so that Service Fabric knows what I'm talking about. And we call that an application, a Service Fabric application. We'll see this shortly in the slides. I've got a test client. So out of that particular template, I've got a test client. Great, fantastic, right click, start running. And then underneath that, I've got the actual actor or the stateless actor, the thing that I've got, and also the interface. So there's a declaration around the interface that we're going to be using to talk into that thing. If you think about how Service Fabric is going to host your application or host your code, it's pretty logical that how do I know what interfaces you have? Here's the interface, and we'll go and talk to the actual instance of the class through the interface. So this particular Hello World or type service doesn't really do a lot, but I'll just show you this code here. Here we go. So I've got, let me just bump that up for you. There we go. So I've got some code where we go to this Notion. So this is in my client. And it's not every client needs to do it, but if I'm going to be talking to some objects living within the state within Service Fabric, how am I going to talk to Service Fabric? And this is how we do it, just through this notion of an actor proxy. And I'd like to go and create something that can handle this particular interface, and I'm going to give it an ID. And in Service Fabric land, in Service Fabric land, it's got a particular path. So the thing that I'm calling is this do work. So the interface itself, and they all just open up large. The interface itself is very simple. Okay, it just says, I'm this. There's a notion of an I actor. And in the true sense of async programming, the template comes out and puts async around our various methods and things like that. So that's the interface. As far as the widget or the actor is that we're calling, just up in here. So the actor itself has a program, it's got a main method on it, and the thing that it does is create an instance that it's able to talk to the Fabric runtime, and then it just sits there and sleeps. So this is the equivalent of a cloud service method, you know, the do work, the run method that we just start up and just sit in the loop all the time, if you think back to your cloud services. So all it's doing is registering itself to the fabric, saying, hey, I'm here as part of this register actor. These are some details about me, and that's how I'm known. And I'm just going to hang out. So that's pretty much what that guy does. Now, in terms of where the code is, we have a class that inherits from this notion of actor. And this is our method in here that just says, here it basically responds back with some work. Now, it goes through this actor event source current so that logging, diagnostics, and other things that are picked up by the service fabric can be registered with it. So we can either leave that line out, and really the last part here is I'm returning some text out of this that, you know, we can say hello world, for example, and we're there. So it's a single call. We go in, we get out. Nothing too dramatic about this. So let's... Now, the part that I did want to just mention here was this application at the top here. And underneath the application, we've got an application manifest. And that basically tells us details about, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, details about the application, about the service. So what I'll do now is go and publish. And I'm going to use a local profile instead of a cloud-based profile. And that means it'll publish to my local instance running. So inside my Visual Studio, I've actually got this notion of a Service Fabric Cluster Explorer. And I can keep track of what's going on. So my application isn't quite there yet. And awesome. Okay. Wonderful. All right, so he didn't quite deploy. The question is it similar to the cloud service emulator? So this is actually running fully locally. So it's not an emulator. So the code that I write would be, and the packages we build will be able to be ported directly. Okay. So we're just awesome. The demo gods are with me right now. So let me just have a look at this for a tick. All looks good. Let's try it again. Okay. Doesn't like that. All right. So what I'm going to do now is just show you the stateful actor. Okay. So the interface itself is essentially, we're storing a counter in this interface. Get count, set count. That's it. So we'd like to be able to set this value that our actor is using. And so this is our interface. So in terms of the counter, in terms of the actor itself, the stateful actor, so this is a slightly different one. The actor, the class inherits from stateful actor. Now, this is our simple class that we're building. And the type of state that we're keeping is this one that got called actor stateful counter state. Right, let's try saying that three times quick. And you'll notice that it's very similar to a WCF type decoration. We've got a data contract, we've got a data member. So the service fabric actually serializes and deserializes this for me. So I don't have to worry too much about it. All that we do in our code is come along and say, I'm an actor, here's my state, this, and I look after this. So when we come along and say get state, we can just use this.state and count comes from that there. Okay? So I don't have to do too much. I don't have to save it. I don't have to store it in a cache or handle it myself. As part of what this is essentially the service fabric. We're declaring to the service fabric, here is a class. I want to maintain state. My state looks like what is the type in the brackets, and the rest you look after. So if I go and modify it, if I change it, you're going to look after it. Remember, these guys are single-threaded execution. So let's go and run it, and I'll show you. So I can, and I'm not going to do it given my last one, but I can put a breakpoint there and hit F5 and say debug. So as the service fabric cluster is running my code, I can go and have a rich, full debug experience with the code. Okay. So all that we're doing in this particular client is the same again. I create a proxy to the stateful actor. Now they're all essentially identified via a particular path, and we'll see more on this shortly. So we have a path, and all I'm doing is getting a proxy to a particular instance of an object. Think of it as a RESTful endpoint, and then I'm just going to declare a count. Let me have a look. Yep, so count's going from count 10 to 10,000. So I'm just going to go in a loop. I sleep for a bit, and I go and get the count. So I set it, and then go and get the value down over here. So from a client perspective, it's not, the code isn't too different to what we're used to. There's a few little bits in there, but nothing dramatic. Let's go and run it. All right. So the reason why I can run this directly now is because I've already got it deployed. Okay. And so here is my application that's deployed over there already. And I'll see how I go with these windows. We get a diagnostics coming out of the service fabric. So it's telling us, and this is exactly what Azure is doing when it deploys your VMs and your web applications and various packages that you give it. So I've got these numbers going and probably a bit difficult to see. Over on the right-hand side is the actual number that we're up to, 74, 75, 76. And then we've just got an actor ID. We've got this class ID, if you like, from within the service fabric. So if I want to go back and talk to that guy again, we reference it via the ID. Get me this type of actor through via this ID is essentially what the proxy method does for us. So that's going on. And you might go, well, that's good. Now what? So let's have a look and see just what our service fabric is doing. When I run this, I've actually got a little task tray icon down here, and we can manage a local cluster. And up pops with this local cluster this tool called the Service Fabric Explorer, which got updated this morning, but I figured, given that I had my talk today, I wasn't going to update it. So I've got some applications already deployed in the Service Fabric itself. Now, I've got some various system-based applications in here as well, which is around the cluster manager, the failover manager. So I've got some services in this space that can help me. So if I have a look at the stateful actor, and I'm just coming down to the actual instance that's running here, I get some details over the right-hand side, and I'll show you that. So we can see it's an application, its version is 1.0, it's ready, it's in a healthy state, and we've got a few things that I can do with my application, such as display and execute and so on. So if I come down to this guy here, we get a little bit more. And this is the part that I wanted. So where is it deployed? So we can start to see the deployed application health. And just over on the right-hand side there, we've got UD and FD. Has anyone seen anything like that before? Not so much in Service Fabric. There we go. Absolutely. So update domain and fault domain. So when I go into my Azure portal, for example, manage windowsazure.com, and or the new portal. So when I go in there and I say, well, you know, now I'd like to deploy this, give me two instances of it, you'll start to see that they both get deployed to a separate fault domain instance, fault domain. So in other words, you know, the running pieces of code can't be in the same rack. They need to be in different racks in case one goes poof. And then we've also got this notion of an upgrade domain. So in other words, the Azure will know, or in this case, Service Fabric will know, when we want to go and upgrade, it won't do all of them at once. It'll do them in a piecemeal type approach. So I've got, I need to get back to, let me just see how we're going. Great, okay, I'm not at 10,000. So I've got this notion. Now, just down over here, I'm running that particular piece of code. So because it's state, right, it's a stateful piece of code, we do care about which node these things are on. So like you're familiar with in Azure, you get three copies of, you know, your SQL database or your blob storage or your file storage, and you get these three copies. One's a primary and two are backups in case the primary goes poof. We get exactly the same now with our code. So that little class that said, hey, I record state, is now running. You can see we've got a primary and we've got, yeah, and the Service Fabric's doing a few things there, and we've got a couple of secondaries. So when the primary is updated with a new counter value, the secondaries are also updated. If we lose a secondary, we don't really care. It's the primary that we care about. So let me just go and remove the primary and destroy it. So I'm just going to simulate some problems. So let's have a look. So I will remove the replica. They call it a replica. And I will then force it. So we've just basically taken out our primary. And just to show you there's no smoke and mirrors, those numbers still keep going. From they didn't skip, they didn't miss a beat, they didn't, you know, somehow we didn't hang out and go, this is failure, you know, we're at DEFCON 5. We're still going. So the fabric is automatically self-healed. All right, I like that word. And we can now come back, and I can't remember what the primary was on. Was it on node 3? Great. So it moved over to node. If I was quicker in the refresh and stuff, we'd be able to see a bit more happening. It's hard to do. But so in other words, a secondary became available and was promoted to a primary, and then somewhere else they said, I am going to be a secondary. And in this case, it was... I think node 5 or so in that one. So, so it's a good question. So the question is, will I get four nodes coming back? We really only need three. And that's why it was there was an idle secondary that was going on, which was the cluster was managing some of this. And so we'll see the clusters in a tick around what it, you know, what they do and how they manage and handle it. But a lot of it can be for density. So we might want to migrate, you know, things over from one node to another node. And if that node's under load or whatever, it'll migrate over. In that case, I was not 100% certain as to what it was doing. Normally, it has an idle secondary when we're moving the primary over to somewhere else. The old primary will be an idle secondary, not involved in the replica set anymore. But as long as we've got three, then three is what it's happy with. And we can configure the cluster and there's a whole PowerShell side of commands underneath all of this as well. So that becomes quite interesting if you think about what we're doing and what we're deploying. So there's various other, you know, pieces of information around the endpoints. How can I contact my primary, how can I get to my secondaries if I need to? So In one sense, we've just got a client saying, hey, I want to talk to you. Go and create me a proxy and act a proxy, and I'll go and call some methods through that interface. That's about the very simple, you know, the simple level that we want to get to. The more that we want to talk to the service fabric and the runtime and start to interrogate the health and the endpoints and where these things are and what state they're up to and so on, then, you know, obviously the deeper knowledge we need of service fabric and the deeper that we go into the APIs, which is fine. So I can also go and have a node view. And, you know, obviously on the node view, it'll, if we go to node one in the cluster, it'll say, I'm running this particular applications. And in this case, we've got our stateful actor running, and we also have another application that I've deployed called Visual Objects. And we've got, you know, various details about that over here, and we've got, you know, metrics that we can pull out and so on coming through, so the load on the node and so on. So it's a real, if you think of Azure, it's bringing it into our application space, which is pretty phenomenal. Okay, so I'm just going to, yes. Great question. So where's it persisting? And can we control that? So yes and yes. So when I deploy, I get this SF, Service Fabric Cluster. And it's in preview, so it's, you know, just treat all this with a grain of salt around. It won't be called Dev Cluster coming out, but, you know, while we're working through the program and things. So we've got our data, we've got our logging. So this is kind of the mechanics behind it. And the data, there's my five nodes. So when I went to create this cluster, I said, just run with the default setup, and it gives me five nodes. I can provide a cluster configuration that'll give me more or less. I can do this in Azure if I want as well, on my own VMs. I could do it on one VM. So I don't need five nodes to set up a dev environment. I don't need five separate machines to set this up. I could do it off one, two, three. The when I was over a couple of weeks ago, the product team was saying that in their reckoning, five was their number that they arrived to give a comfortable coverage across all the services. So underneath data is where underneath data and the node stores is where we can specify where we want this to be, where we want the data to be. So we can do that. Yep.
Are they going to extend that? So like Project Orleans has a pluggable architecture for where you store the state.
So the question is, are they going to extend state storage so that where are we going to store it? I don't know, because it's quite paramount to the running of the service fabric. Ideally we want to store it on SSD drives. So that if we go and create certain types of nodes in Azure, for example, or wherever, we want to be able to say store it on that particular drive. But that gives us our persistence too. So just between the first bits of code and the second bits of code gives us our persistence around, you know, the top. So this particular actor that I couldn't get to deploy, but that particular guy didn't have any kind of persistence. So as soon as that class was unloaded from memory, away it went. Whereas the second one, I've got persistence with. So the ID, the actor ID and the state come together. So I can have logic, I can have state in there. Also, Service Fabric does some pretty smart things around, if I've got thousands of these things running and I haven't used it for a while, it'll just serialize it out and persist it to disk as it normally does. And then not until a call comes in, it'll wake itself up again. So it's very similar to, you know, IIS app pools and, you know, things like that, application pools, where, you know, your app domain can unload out of memory, and when it comes back up again, it'll load up again. But what we're doing now is having the ability to break it down to our individual classes, our individual components within our application. And can we re-architect and design a different, slightly different application along the way with that particular piece of functionality? And yes, we can. So let me just flick over to talking a little bit around the pieces that we just saw there. So we have this notion of an application. The application consists of code and configuration. So the configuration tells the service fabric what you're deploying, how you'd like it to be deployed. Are you stateful? Are you not? So one of the and how many nodes do we want to go out and be deployed on is the question as well. So maybe you've got a high volume system and you'd like to be able to say, hey, when you go and deploy this out onto all the nodes and have it on hot standby. So get ready because we're about to thump the system. So lots of things that we can specify in this configuration. The version number as well is important. So it comes down into this notion of a package, okay? And then we can deploy this package into, and we'll see a couple of different packages in the other applications that I've got. So we've got this application package that we saw in the Fabric Explorer. So it gives us things like versioning, lifetime, importantly, isolation. I can talk to other microservices as long as I know their address, as long as I know that they're there. So within the same package, it makes it quite simple for me to talk to these guys, but cross package boundaries, we need to go and ask the service runtime for those details. And then, so I can deploy one package in, have separate versioning, and it has a certain type to it, and I can also then deploy another package in. So in this particular case, we've got a web application, which is a web front end, and we've also got a service there, we'll call it a service, that may be stateful. And they have a type, okay? So it's important that they have, that's how we identify them, via their type. So their application name and their type. And that goes towards that path when the client says, you know, the client on the outside of Service Fabric says, I want to talk to this thing. And the way that it specifies that particular service that it wants to talk to is fabric/application name/whatever the type over there is that we have. So, all right. In terms of instantiation of an application, as we saw it run, how does it run? How does it know? So we have these service type, which is, you know, similar to a CLR type. We've also got the application type. And then the instance, as we saw, was the GUID. And Service Fabric is very clever about this. And so there's our cluster that lives over there that we've got spun up. And our packages from application 4 may want to go out, be deployed to three particular nodes. Maybe it's stateless, stateful. It's just running across for load balancing. So we get automatic load balancing in there as well. And then our other package from that same application can live over there. The choice is quite, you know, we're free to pick and choose how we'd like this to be. But if you think about Azure and how it deploys out your VMs, how it deploys out your web apps and things, what we're doing is being able to take exactly that same process down into our code. So the key behind this is that a very simple way to achieve stateful type services and not change too much about what you do is by using a particular collection, a particular data storage type known as reliable collections. So we know about collections, we know about concurrent collections that they've come up, you know, various progressions in the .NET framework and so on. And now in Service Fabric, we have this notion of reliable collections. And they're persisted, they're looked after, they're durable. We can even have transactions across them as well. So that in my code, I can have a stateless class, but if I go and retrieve back some data from a reliable collection, I can change it, maintain it, update it, and then I'm done. So I don't need to maintain state within my class itself. Very similar to, you know, your websites and your RESTful APIs and so on. We're always calling down into databases and the like to pull back some details, pull back some data. The actual code itself that we write doesn't maintain state typically. So this here, by using different variable sets, we can then achieve some pretty phenomenal results. Okay? So that's one way to do it in terms of our reliable collections. And then we start to look at the reliable services API where we get lower down to the service fabric and we control things like concurrency and we're thread, you know, thread manipulation and how we want to talk out and how clients talk into us and so on. So this here is really, you know, the one slide that you want to take away from this session. Not that we're finishing it all, but this is it here. Our left-hand side is the classic way that we develop our applications, right? We sort of sit there and go, I'm going to deploy this into the cloud, web app, cloud service, whatever you want to call it. It lives there. Okay, we're doing something really good. We need a queue, right? We need to decouple this from something else. So we'll have a queue somewhere, and event hubs, whatever it might be, there's our queue. And we've got these other processes. Maybe they're all tied up in the one web app, and you've got some scheduled jobs running, web jobs and things like this, or maybe you don't. But that's basically the way that we architect our solutions. And then we've got some sort of storage around the place. So maybe my application is looking after a shopping cart. Maybe it's looking after user profiles. You know, some various other application entities and things. Maybe I've got Redis cache in there handling the bottom bit for me, and I've tied that into my application, and it looks really good. In Service Fabric, they have Redis cache internally built. So that's quite interesting as well. So over on the right-hand side, we've got our stateless website thing at the very top. Down the bottom, we've got our code, and we're using stateful objects. That's it. We don't need to know about the database. We don't need to know about, you know, I've got three copies of that thing running. We just saw how if we destroy the primary, the most important thing, the secondary copies, one pops up and says, hey, I'm primary again. So how do I do that? How do I make it, you know, take advantage of this particular piece? Let me just switch over. Okay, great. So that's, let me just switch over to, so here is another service, and this particular service or application, once again, it's called WordCount, and what it does is maintain a count of words in a reliable collection. And let me cut to the chase on this guy. Okay. So here, this is a service, okay? And basically, it's a stateful service. So I'm declaring to Service Fabric, I'm going to maintain some state in here. Keep an eye out. Now, we've got this run. I'm just going to sort of go over to the right here. So I've got these iReliable queue dictionary, and it's really just to give you a feel for some different objects. I don't need, you know, demo land, great, I'm just giving you a feel. I don't need to implement all of this. I could just do one. Over on the right-hand side, this is where the magic is, where we go off and we ask state manager, can I please have my dictionary called word count dictionary. That's it. So I'm going out to a stateful state manager provided to me by the APIs in Service Fabric, and we're getting back this word, this thing that we've named word count dictionary. This thing is available, this dictionary is available within my application. Remember, we get isolation. So word count dictionary can be used elsewhere in another application deployed, but it's going to mean something else. It'll relate to something else. So there's my dictionary. I've got three objects, and all we're going to do is update them. And I'll show you this coming through. So we update them, and I'll just, let me just see. We've basically got a transaction over the top. So what we're doing is saying, well, I need all three of those things to be updated, or none of them. classic sort of model. But my code here is very simple. Don't worry about, you know, what it's doing in terms of the words and working out a few things in there. There's some other bits that it does, but essentially, you know, I've got a run method, and we then go and update those collections in a transaction and save it. And when we commit that transaction, they're saved. So my code is very simple. My class is very simple. My program is very simple, right? I don't need queues. I don't need to, you know, push it out onto a queue. What format do I use? Well, let's serialize it. Is it JSON? Or maybe, oh, there's an offending character. Oh, hold on. Let's go and, you know, escape it. We just introduce so many other things that take us away from developing the application itself. So let me just fire up this guy and just show you the application running. So here it is. At the top, it generates a random word. There's some details around the partition of the, in other words, whereabouts in the Service Fabric cluster are we talking to? What partition on the nodes are we talking to? And then, so we've got a total of 324 words and those sorts of things that are in there. And I'll just, so I can turn this off, I can persist it, and it tells me that I've got this is just another method on the call. So I've got a certain partition, it's looking after words that are within this range, and there's that many of them that are there. So we can reboot, we can restart, we can come back, and essentially the reliable dictionary is the thing that looks after this. Yes, is that a question up the back? Did you have a question, or are you stretching?
No.
Are you giving me the wind up for time? All right. Okay. So look, really exciting stuff in terms of where this is, and admittedly, the code itself, we're not looking at thousands of lines of code. That's the important thing. I'm not saying, here, grab all of this. You need all this extra scaffolding, framework, and plumbing to even get a look in to make this thing work. It's pretty phenomenal. It's the next, if you think about it, the next evolution from cloud services. Okay, so I've got a couple of things left to demo. So I'm just going to talk a little bit more about the clusters, and then we'll demo it. Okay, so the clusters themselves, normally dev cluster, start off with 5 nodes. They can be 5 separate VMs if you want. They could be whatever configuration you feel comfortable with. Important thing to note, the Service Fabric runs on my machine, runs on our local, you know, data center, data room, whatever, server room, runs on Azure, runs on other clouds, right? So that's important. The same bit of code runs across everywhere. If you think about, you know, your cloud services today and possibly the web apps, the way you deploy them, you might need to modify if you're deploying locally or if you're deploying, you know, to Azure and so on, whereas this is one and the same. So that's a very big, important piece. So some of the things that we get under the hood, so I'm just breaking apart that blue bar that we had before, and we've got things like, you know, federation, we've got things like transport, how do we talk between these nodes, and things like, you know, activation and communication, reliability, how do we get this, and this is what the fabric gives us for free, okay, been in the making for 5 years, so it's not something that's just cropped up. So what happens in terms of a failure? So we've got our nodes that are sitting there, and we're at sort of time, the time T0. We're at this point in time. The next time something, you know, communication is broken. That's great. White came out on white. So communication's broken, and we've got a node failing. So a new node will come in, start to be part, you know, taken in as part of the cluster, and we then just resume communication again. We expect that, okay? If you think about in the infrastructure world, what we know from the elastic scale in Azure and the fault tolerance and the fault domains and so on, we now have this at our application level. P per class by class. So my entire monolithic application doesn't need to be deployed, you know, in the traditional, you know, the way that we do it today. I could have a very simple, dumb web front end, and I could have a very simple, stateful type service at the back end that handles any remembering, any memory that my application needs to do. So if we look at our, you know, classic sort of three-tier model, we get back to, you know, you've got your stateless front end, your web front end typically, serving out the UI, we've got some components, business logic in the works. This all looks really good. This is great, right? And we've got our storage down there. So how do we manage it? What about our, we might have queues going from, you know, one tier to the other tier to say, well, hey, this is going to get really busy. We can't hold up the UI while the, you know, button press is going on. Let's just pop it onto a queue. Let's then just send it back from a queue to, you know, the business logic will pick it up, and if there's anything in there, start to do some background processing. And maybe there might be some inter-process communication that needs to happen via another queue. And you might think we're joking here, but give your application 6 months and see how it progresses, and you'll see these things start to appear. And what about scale? What about, oh, there might be a little bit of caching involved in there as well, right? So you get a lot of moving parts. So how do we do it, you know, in terms of our service fabric? That's it. Right, so we have our stateless, and then we have our stateful areas, our classes that say, hey, I record state, I'm a counter, I'm a shopping trolley, I'm a Halo user, whatever that might be. Low latency, right? It's always there. We don't have to worry about the do we get it from cache? Do we get it from, you know, our database, from wherever that may be as well, right? And if it's not the cache, go fetch it from the database. Who's written all that logic? I have, right? I've spent the last 6 months doing it, right? So, and you optimize it so much, whereas here it's either in memory and you let Service Fabric look after it. Sorry. And so, you know, what have we got at the bottom of this? So we've got logging, we've got, you know, a whole bunch of diagnostics. We know how the thing's performing. You think about what Azure does and how are your VMs performing, or how's your footprint, your Azure footprint performing. There's a lot of diagnostics. This is where it's coming. We're getting the benefits of all of that in our application space. So we have, in our Service Fabric cluster, we have the notion of quorums, right? Similar cluster terminology where who's got the majority of vote? Is it healthy? Is it not? Those sorts of things. So that's baked in as part of the fabric itself. And then, so if we start to, you know, have a look at our stateful microservice being deployed out, we've got our state in there, and there's various, you know, as we saw from the primary to the secondary, we get replication that goes on. So this part's really, you know, particularly important. If a read comes into the primary, we saw the stateless ones we don't care about, right? They're like our cloud services. If we hit it on a node, we get it. If not, it'll be spun up somewhere else and we'll get it over there. But it's either there or it's not. Whereas the state ones we really like to have a look at, because for reading a value, I'll go to the primary, pick it up. It's either in memory, it's not, it's nearby, it's in a cache, or it's more persisted down onto disk for longer term storage. And that's just purely up to the Service Fabric cluster as to how it makes that determination for us. If we go and do a write, then the write, sorry, the... This is awesome. All right. Let's see if I can do it. Okay, if we do a write, the write will be written out to the secondaries, okay, in that one hit at that point. So it's written out very fast into node communication in the cluster. Now the acknowledgements come back. Yeah, I wrote it successfully. I stored it. You'll see here that not all of them did return back the acknowledgement. So it needs just the majority of the vote. And then it'll go back and return the value and say, beautiful, we're done. And then this guy, a little bit later on, comes back and says, hey, by the way, I just saved that. Wasn't I good? Right? So quite interesting technology that we have. In terms of, you know, reconfigurations that are available, and we saw a little bit of this in practice, but, you know, what happens if the primary fails? A secondary will pop up, and say, hey, I'm going to be promoted to primary, and it then becomes the read-writable replica of that data. And then if a secondary fails, we don't care pretty much. A secondary gets elected pretty quickly and then gets a synchronization of the database, of the data in the background. This particular piece, where what happens here is the previous primary says, hey, I'm back now, I've been fixed, I've restored, communication got restored, whatever it is, and the new primary says, I'm primary, you need to be secondary. So they work all that stuff out automagically for us. And in terms of, you know, bringing a new secondary online, secondary starts to get the data that the primary has through synchronization and then becomes a secondary when it's ready. And beautiful. So this happens for us, which is quite nice. In terms of the replicas, and we can see this through tooling and things, idle secondary, active secondary, I'm a primary. So let me see. Yeah, okay, so we did a little bit on that where we basically stopped the primary and watched the counter continue on. So let me just switch over. So I've got another application that is a visual. Yep, okay. So I'm going to go to this visual objects. Now, I can, awesome. It's like being a contortionist sometimes. All right, so what am I looking at here? You're looking at a visual representation of the state that's being stored by Service Fabric. The client browser has a 3D, just using some 3D libraries. And what we're getting back from Service Fabric via a RESTful call, web API call, is the state of all these objects. So their position and the history or the length of the tail. So what we're then doing is rendering that. And we're going back and calling. And part of the call going into Service Fabric, we go and update the positions. Now my client browser isn't the best for rendering this stuff, but just bear with the demo, right? So this is running as part a web application at the front end, just handling the web API calls, and part a stateful service living in the background. So let me go to this particular application quickly. And so you'll notice that I've got two instances now. I've got the website just running on node 2, which is the bottom one down there, which is node 2, and it's ready. And you'll see the state being maintained by our typical sort of usual model where we've got a primary, and in this case, two active secondaries. So I can go and start to cause some chaos. And we can, for example, take this node out of the equation, or what I'll do is remove this. I'll take the primary out, and it just tells me I shouldn't do it because it's for production. And you'll notice that these guys didn't miss a beat, right? Similar to the counter that we saw earlier, but these guys are still doing their thing, right? So in the interest of time, I'm just going to move on to the upgrade. So as part of what I'd like to do now is explore this upgrade. So how can I upgrade my application and use some of the smarts that Service Fabric gives me? So I've got that whole diagnostics event log going on in the background. As far as the upgrade goes, I'll go in and I've already made some changes to this particular application and compiled it as a package. And I'll just show you that. So I've got a version 1.0 of the package, I've got a version 1.1 of the package, and a version 1.2 of the package. And so all that I'm interested in is the configuration file, and then I've got my various bits underneath that. So this is my application, and then I've got my my two packages, the web front end and my stateful back end there. And that, this is implemented as an actor, by the way, a stateful actor. So what I'm going to do is to upgrade, and I could do an upgrade from within Visual Studio, for example. So I could come along here and say, where are you? That's the one I want. So go and do an upgrade. I can, you know, go and specify the versions that I want. And this tooling, just keep an eye on the public release. It'll be updated. But I can specify the versions that I want, and then I can upgrade. Then it'll go and do the upgrade. So what I'm going to do is to do it from the command line. And I've just gotten a... Here's my command that goes off and does a deploy. And I specify my package of version 1.2. And I'm going to hit to go and do an upgrade. Now, what this upgrade does is, it's probably best to show you it here visually. But what this upgrade will do is it should give them longer tails. And these objects will start rotating. Now, that pause is basically my client, my front end. So I'll just see where we're up to. So it's like, you know, waiting for an upgrade, great. Okay, so we're in the middle of it. If I was to switch back to the Service Fabric Explorer, we get this, you know, we'll see it going through the nodes, going through the update domains as it's going through. And this is sort of a V1. It can be written a bit better, as always. But this will come up in a tick. And we'll start to see them rotate. So a few interesting things about the update. If we're upgrading, there's what we're upgrading is logic. So in that stateful service, what does it mean to move? So move means, we're rotating. Yes? Yeah, beautiful. Okay, so we're there. So these guys are rotating. Think about your updating, right? So we've got stateful serialized data on these things. So we've got serialized data on these things. Is that me? Oh, okay. Great. And not every upgrade will work seamlessly. And the reason is that, let's say I upgrade and my whole state for these objects, I'm changing completely. Or I'm removing, you know, three fields out of the state that I previously had. Right? So just think about it. You know, the data won't be there anymore. So these guys are going to come back. So I do need to manage that. I do need to say, hey, I'm actually doing a breaking change here. So do I push out a version 2.0 of my application or that back-end service? But the choice, the thing that I just want to come back to here is, at the very beginning of the session, I said, you know, downtime in systems and applications is hard to get. Here we're able to have it running and do an upgrade as a piecemeal. So I did the upgrade in what we call an unmonitored auto state, which means don't monitor the health of the nodes in the application, just go ahead and do it automatically. Go ahead and update the nodes. I have a few different options to do an upgrade, which is manually. So I can upgrade the nodes manually if I want, if it's a significant data change and there's a lot of information there that we need to do something with. So quite interesting, right? Lastly, if I can get back to you, come on. I know I'm out of time, I'm short on time. Lastly, I just wanted to show you in the portal, I had to do something special to get my subscription whitelisted, but this will be in public preview very soon. So I can go to the portal and I can create exactly the things that I created, you know, that I'm running on my desktop, on my machine. So I can create this Service Fabric cluster, and in fact I've got one running. I 10 minutes in the oven and it looks like this. So I actually have, all right, so here's my cluster that I just created literally about an hour and a half ago. And it's starting to give us the view of the Service Fabric Explorer. So I've got my nodes, and let's go off and see the health of my nodes in here. There they are in there. There's my five nodes. They're actually physical, they're separate VMs. I can specify the size of those VMs when I go to create the cluster. And I can even come down to here to my applications and specify the path. So rather than deploy locally, I'd now like to deploy this. Big screens are awesome. I'd now like to deploy this to the cloud, to that cloud cluster. I can specify security, I can have certificate-based security going, whole bunch of key vault type security as well, from deployment, from inter-node communication, inter-application communication. There's a whole variety of different things that I can do. And so now in this case, I'm going to hit publish, it'll go away, and start to deploy that to my cloud cluster, which is pretty phenomenal. Okay, and then it's now running as part of my, you know, Azure footprint. It's running as part of my fabric. There, I can grab what I have, what I installed on my local machine, install it on a single VM as well. I can scale this out to, you know, 20 odd VMs if I want, and that then becomes my application environment, from, you know, web apps to database apps, anything. It all becomes, you know, web APIs. How I talk in and out of it from the outside is very simple, okay? All right. So let me just jump through this for the moment. The application management, all very well handled. The updating of the apps, as we saw, the packages, they go through the different upgrade domains one at a time, as we'd expect from, you know, Azure and our VMs and what we've come to know over the past 3-4 years of what's been in there. But now we have, you know, the important part is, how can I get no downtime? It's not 100% foolproof. Don't get me wrong. You know, if there's some critical dependent database that you need, and yeah, we still need to manage that. But certainly from a code level and from an application level, we now have a vehicle that will allow us, you know, frictionless upgrade and potentially, you know, trouble-free type upgrade. So it's pretty phenomenal. In terms of, you know, what we just got out of there, works on my machine, says the developer, right? So a lot of these demos that you see, great, you know, there's 10 requests an hour and that's it. But how do we build systems that handle 200, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 requests a second? In the mobile space, or when you start to build your applications out using the cloud, mobile services or app services, how do we handle that? And here is a great way on how to do it, that, you know, another instance will automatically be spun up of the microservice that you've got deployed, or the actor, or the reliable service that you're running. So this is the slide that I just want to leave you with, and that is, you know, we think about all the features that we want, and we should be focused on the features, not trying to make it battle-hardened, scalable, fault-tolerant. What about logging? What about diagnostics? How do I know it's broken? What happened last Thursday? Why was the system slow? Do we know all that? And do we spend all our time building in all that plumbing? Or do we get on and start building the features? So, hope you enjoyed it, folks. It was a bit of a whistle-stop whirlwind tour, I agree, but it's a pretty phenomenal platform. And when I talk to guys in my team, it's 3 days later that they come back and they go, Mick, that was unreal. Hang on, we can do this and this and this. And, you know, at the time it was like, where am I going to use this? You know, what's this about? So key takeaways, great platform, lots of things packed under the hood, as you saw in some of the slides. A slight change in our programming model. We can build, you know, we can build in lots of different languages. We can run our code, as you saw, you know, on different cloud platforms, right? So Azure, your own, you know, maybe you've got your own data center that you want to build this up with, great, go and do it. Amazon, for example, AWS, you can go and do it, fantastic. And we can have a very simple deployment model. It's the same code base, and that's something that I've been trying to get back to personally in terms of our governance and deployment methodologies around, well, if we use the cloud, you know, hybrid systems, for example, we do enough on-prem, and then once we get to the cloud, we say, hey, well, you know, this is all getting a bit too busy for on-prem, let's go and deploy into the cloud. What do we need to change? What do we need to, you know, update and repackage and rebuild? That goes away here. So I'm quite excited about it. And as I mentioned to you before, great piece of technology and gets, you know, in the last 5 years, it's pretty phenomenal in terms of, you know, what we're going to be seeing going forward. So certainly, you know, Mahesh is a couple of sessions on tomorrow, I believe, on Service Fabric. So if you're interested, definitely go and have a look into it because, you know, you can't know enough about it at this stage. All right. Thank you very much, folks. Thanks for your time. And enjoy the rest of Ignite.